Okay, let's review where we are and where we're going, and then we'll get to work. Today we're going to do a spreadsheet review, and we'll be working with these two spreadsheets, and we'll talk about those in just a second, but the one that you need to pull up is this one. The first one says Tyler Paint Spreadsheet Setup. And have a few other things up here we'll be talking about later on. But then you have an assignment due next week at this time, which is to create the cash budget for your company. And so that what we're doing here today and last time will be useful for that. Also, then the week after that, if you want to go ahead and do it at that time, you can, or you can wait until afterwards. We'll be projecting your cash budget into pro forma statements for your company. So that's while you're working on the cash budget, you might as well build it so you can do that too. We'll be talking about the process that you use for that next time, but it's fairly straightforward. So build it and build the cash budget in such a way that it's going to be easy to expand on into a balance sheet and an income statement after that. To get an idea how that needs to be set up, or what an easy way to set it up is so that you can do that, take a look at the model that we're going to be using here, which is an integrated problem that starts with a cash budget and then projects the balance sheet and the income statement for that company. And so the spreadsheet that's right here is a setup that walks you through that. We will walk through it next time, but if you want to see the original setup for how that works, that'd be a good one to look at. So there's at the end of it, there's what it is many tabbed pages that walk you through steps along the way. The last one is the finished model. So that kind of shows you how to set up, how you'd want to think about setting up a cash budget to be able to do all of that. Okay, any questions about anything that we're have done, are doing, going to do? Oh. Okay. Well, let's get started. This is the base spreadsheet for building the cash budget for the example that we looked at last time. Our goal is to complete the calculations in this spreadsheet and also make it look good, something like this. And we may not end up with it looking exactly like that, but we'll come pretty close. So what I want to do is take one session of our class to hopefully arm you with some tools that are going to be useful not just for you for doing the spreadsheets that you're going to need for your business plan project, but for anything else. So you all know how to do spreadsheets. Some of you can probably teach me things about it, but others are kind of at a point where you could use the power of that tool a lot more effectively, and it is a very powerful tool. So that's the goal of what if I can do it in one session, that's what I'm trying to do is remind you if you forgot and teach you some things about how to do some fairly powerful things in a spreadsheet. But the end result being, you know, make it look good when you turn in something as well. Let me give you a little background on spreadsheets. We think of them as kind of a ubiquitous tool. We think of spreadsheets as Microsoft Excel, which currently, at least, and for many years in the past, has been it's been the de facto standard and kind of owns the spreadsheet market. That wasn't always true. Spreadsheets started out on mainframe computers back in the 70s, but being confined to mainframe computers, they were not particularly useful to people outside of large businesses. But the concept of a spreadsheet being a two-dimensional table of numbers that you can put formulas in so that you can change inputs and the formulas adjust so you get outputs that vary depending on the inputs is where spreadsheets came from. Before computer spreadsheets, of course, there were paper and pencil spreadsheets. And they were a very useful but hard tool to use because the worst thing about doing a spreadsheet is you get it all done, and then the manager says, oh, well, gee, you know, our sales projection is this instead of this. And you have to go back and redo the whole thing, or erase and fill in the answers. So the idea of having a computerized model that would do all of that for you, you build the guts, you build the calculations, and then are able to change the inputs so that you get outputs was extremely useful as a concept. As soon as there were any personal computers, so the Apple II, for instance, and in IBM, the very first IBM computer, those were preceded, the IBM PC was preceded by computers that operated on an operating system called CPM. And they were very, you know, small, low memory, very unpowerful machines. But a spreadsheet product was created early on in the early 80s called VisiCalc by Dan Bricklin and a few others. And VisiCalc was the first spreadsheet designed for those little personal computers that were starting to come about at that time. So it was a very small program. We think of programs now in megabytes or more. These were in kilobytes. They were so small that they would fit on what today would have been much smaller than a 1.44 megabyte floppy disk. So very, very small programs that did very powerful things on computers that did not have much power, did not have much memory. Some people would argue, and I think they'd argue very effectively, that it was the creation of that spreadsheet tool, VisiCalc, that drove the PC boom, that drove IBM to start making the first PC that was a business computer, and that drove that into the business environment. Because the idea of being able to have a computer for the CFO and for the people who worked in finance and accounting that would load up this relatively cheap spreadsheet program and be able to do the things that had taken them hours and days and weeks to do before was huge. So there's a good argument to say that what drove the whole PC boom in business was that program, was the spreadsheet. Things have come and gone. For a long time, Lotus 1-2-3 was the de facto ruler of the spreadsheet world, and they kind of crashed and died. And Microsoft, which had Excel for a long time before that, but it wasn't a very good program, took over. And so now they are the de facto ruler in that environment, but not for long. And I'll show you some up-and-comers that I think are going to take over that market very soon. And they'll take it over because they're just as powerful, they have more features, and they're free. Okay, and that free part is very important because Excel is not free. All right, we're going to do many things. We're going to fill in the information from the problem that we looked at last time. We have basically the guts of a spreadsheet ready here. We've got an input section up at the top. We need to format that part so it looks better. But we've got our expected monthly sales for April, May, and June. We've got percentage of collections. We've got other costs as inputs here. And then the guts of the cash budget will be down here. So as we go along, we'll do some formatting as we go, but we'll also do the calculations first and then go back and do a lot of other formatting afterwards. Two things that will help you right away in a spreadsheet. The first one is what almost nobody does, and I have no reason, no understanding of why. The easiest way to make a spreadsheet look a lot better in two steps is to insert a column at the left and insert at least one row at the top. I'm going to insert two. Okay. Everybody makes a spreadsheet so it's all crammed up against the left and it's all crammed up against the top. And it makes it very difficult to read. You know from reading any magazine, paper, article, anything, white space is very important. It helps set things off. It gives your eye a rest. It lets you focus on things. So adding a column here with nothing in it that you can adjust the width of, and rows at the top with nothing in them, immediately sets it off. And so there's a huge benefit right away in formatting to do that. The second thing is, before you start doing anything else, it's a good idea if your spreadsheet is going to have a lot of numbers in it, which most spreadsheets would, particularly if you're going to have it be essentially accounting statements in it, format it with accounting format. The default format is general numbers. What general numbers do is this number here doesn't have any commas in it, and notice it's right up against the right-hand border of the cell. Other things, decimals are right up against the border and they're just displayed as decimals. Things here, notice that labels are right up against the left-hand border and some other things that we'll see as we go on. So the first thing that will improve a lot of things that you do is to change the format. Now one thing I'm going to show you, one thing that we won't see after I change the format, but it's something that's real important. Before I change that format, I'm going to underline that cell. So of course, to underline it, you've got tools at the top, and so I'm just going to click on the underline tool. So I've underlined June. Notice that it's just underlined on the three letters. And if I center that in that cell, then it's going to be centered, but it's just under the three letters. If we had a five-letter word, it'd be just under the five letters. And in a lot of things that you want to do in a table, it would really be nice to have that underline be across the whole width of the cell, no matter what the width of the cell is. So that's one thing that'll be different after we change this format. To change the format on everything, the easiest way to do that is go up to the very top left corner and click the empty box up there. That highlights the whole spreadsheet all at once. And then you can right-click anywhere within that area and pull up the format, pull up the menu, and on that menu is Format Cells. So I'm going to click Format Cells. I'm going to click Accounting. And then depending on what we think our data will look like, usually in financial statements, we're not going to need decimal places. We'll be working with large numbers. I'm going to set that to zero. For particular things in there, we may want it set more, but we can set individual cells by themselves. And typically, I'm not going to want dollar signs everywhere, so we'll put dollar signs where we want them and take them off everywhere else. Okay. So when I say OK, click outside of that to turn off the formatting. Let's notice a few things that happened here. The first thing is numbers got commas where they ought to be. They also got a nice little pad here by the side of the cells. These cells got a little pad here. So when we create labels now, if we had lines around this, we had boxes around this to set it off, we'd have a nice space there in between the border of the box and where the label starts. Other things we're going to need to go back and change in the formatting because we had 0.5 and something else here, so we'll need to work on those cells. But pretty much everything else was done. Let's take a look at how the underlining works here now. I'll turn off the underlining here and put it on all of these. Now we get an intelligent underline that will cover the whole width of the cell. This is particularly useful when we're trying to do summations in numbers. So if we're working down an income statement, we need a line where we're doing summations at different points down that income statement. Instead of that line being under just the numbers, whatever number of numbers there are in that cell, it's under the whole cell. So it gives a nice uniform appearance all the way down that statement. Okay. So a lot of other things happen in that formatting when you switch it to accounting, but those are some. Another thing here to notice is that after it was set in accounting and we put in that underline, it automatically adjusted the height of this row to take that underline into consideration. So it's not cramming up the numbers or the letters that are in that cell. It actually widened out, increased the height of that automatically to take care of the underline that went in it. So it does a lot of things automatically for you that you typically find in financial statements. Okay, let's look at our input section. Again, a model always needs to have separated out inputs, which are things that could change. So assumptions that have to be made. Your model's going to have a lot of those. Instead of putting them in one place at the top of your model, you may want to put them on a separate page. That's fine. The user needs to know where to go to find the input. So if you want to put them on a separate page and you've changed the tab at the bottom to say inputs, for instance, that's fine. You may find it easier to first build your model with everything on one page and then pull it apart so that your formulas are easier to create with everything on one page. And then you can take sections out and move them to another page without destroying the logic. We'll look at how to do that in a minute. Sometimes it's easiest to start with one big model and then pull it apart and make it look better by putting it different places. Okay, so our assumption section is up here. I'm just going to bold a couple things here to get started with so we know where they are. And one trick you have if you're having trouble seeing anything is if you have a mouse with a wheel on it, or if your laptop has a kind of a scroll bar off to the side of the mouse pad where you can run your finger up and down, it's actually a scroll. If you hold down your control key and scroll, you're increasing or decreasing the zoom. Of course, you can do it on menu too, but it's quick to do it here. So if you just want to increase the size of everything so you can see it, you just work with that scroll wheel. All right, let's start building some of the calculations. Here are our inputs for monthly sales, which came from the problem. Down below, we also have sales from the two periods before. Those don't need to be inputs because they already happened. They aren't going to change. So we just need inputs for the months coming up. We also have inputs for collections. Here, those were in percents, and when I formatted it as accounting, we got rid of the percent. And so it's formatting with no decimal places, so it's formatting some point something or other as a percent is zero. So let's change that first so we see what it is. If I highlight those three cells, and up at the top on the menu bar, you've got lots of tools, and one of them is probably the percent symbol. And if you click that, it'll format it as percent. If you want more than one decimal place, or this one is automatically formatted with no decimal places, you can add other things to the toolbar, and some of the things there you might want to take off. You just don't use them, or there's some other way to do it. Or you can even have two rows of tools on the top, things that you would use a lot. There's two ways to do that. One is if you go off over to the very right side of the toolbar, there's a darker colored rectangle with a down arrow in it. If you click that down arrow, it offers you other tools that are fairly common that you might want to add to the toolbar. Actually, they're just kind of an extension of the toolbar out there, and it can't show them all. And one of them is the little zeros with an arrow going to the left or to the right, and that's the increase or decrease decimals. And so it's which way do you want the decimal to go. And if you click on those, then it's going to add that. Since you've used it, it'll go ahead and add it to the toolbar, and you'll have that there to use. Here, I got my mouse went away. And if you click it once, you'll add one. You click it two, you've added two. And the other tool going the other way, of course, will take them off. So if you've got decimal places you don't want, you can take that off. You can also add tools to the toolbar permanently or take them off. If you go to an empty place in the toolbar, like above the toolbar, and right-click there, it gives you two things there. One is you can add standard toolbars. So this is going to add a list of tools that are in some particular grouping of a toolbar. Or you can add individual ones. So here we've got toolbars for drawing, and the standard and the formatting are the ones that are showing. But we can put borders up there too. We've got a little bit of a border tool we'll look at in a minute. But then lots of other ones down below. Or you can customize. One we're going to use some as we go through here will be the drawing toolbar. So let's go ahead and add that. And that usually adds down at the bottom. Gives us some shapes and arrows and things to work with. And then let's customize a little bit what's going on. So I'm going to go, I right-clicked up there. I'm going to click on customize. And in the middle tab for commands, it gives you lots of commands that are categorized by group. And so for format commands, there's all sorts of different ones that you could add to the toolbar. We've got the normal ones, a bold and italics and underline and such. that are up there, but as you get going, there may be other ones that you use frequently that you'd like to go ahead and add to a toolbar. Anytime you want to add something to it, all you need to do is take the tool and, let's find one here that'll be useful. One we're going to use, if it isn't already on your toolbar, will be this one, Merge and Center. All you have to do is drag that. You just grab it and drag it up to the toolbar wherever you want it to be. And so I want it to be, well, it's already on my toolbar, but now I've got two of them. Okay. And anything that you want to get off the toolbar while this is showing, just drag it off. So, okay, I got two of those, so I'll just drag it off and it goes away. Anything else that I don't need there that I'd want to take off, I just drag off. I can drag it up to the top toolbar, or I can just drag it off. I drag it off completely, it goes away. So you can customize your toolbar to be the things that you use a lot. And of course, you can get to anything on the menu, but it's nice to have them there to just point at when you use them. I'm going to go ahead and put dollar signs on these inputs for sales. We'll see how to format the whole statement down below with dollar signs. We don't want them everywhere. But here we would want dollar signs on that. So of course, one of the things that are automatically there in your toolbar is a dollar sign for currency format. If I click that, unfortunately, its default is that it wants to put two decimals on everything. So we have to have our other tool available to decrease the decimals and get it back to where we want it to be. There's also a tool that's very useful, which is the Format Painter. Once we've got something looking the way we'd like it to look, rather than go through all the steps it would take to make something else look like that, we could just copy the format like we would copy the contents of a cell. And these two cells, for instance, are also percents. Since we've already got this formatted as percents the way we want it to look, we can put our cursor in the cell we want to copy the format from, use the Format Painter tool, which is a little paintbrush up on your toolbar, and if it's not there, we can add it in. So I'm gonna, I don't see it, I'm gonna go over here. So it's on the ones that are sitting there ready to be used. I'm gonna click that. It'll get added to the toolbar now. When you click it once, it's picked up the format from that cell, and now wherever you click, you can hold down your right key and highlight an area. I'm going to highlight both of those cells, and it'll paint that format in there. The other way to use the Format Painter brush is if you click it twice, it locks it on. Notice here, if I say, pick up this, I click it once, I only get one chance to paint, and as soon as I paint the format on, it's off. If I click that twice, it picks up that format and leaves it on, and there will be a little box around the tool saying this is still on. And now I could paint that format anywhere I wanted to in as many different places as I wanted to, and wouldn't have to redo picking out the format. And then I'd go back up and click it off and be out of it. Okay, let's start building our model down below. We're going to need to bring down sales from up above, sales as inputs. So we want the user to only change things in one place. So the user is going to change in the input section. So that's where sales are going to get changed, not down here. But we want the cell that we're going to be calculating from to adjust for whatever the sales are in the input area. So the simplest formula we can write, formulas need to start with a mathematical symbol or an equal sign, otherwise it thinks we're writing text, we're writing a sentence. So we can start it with an equal sign, and then all we want to do is bring a value from somewhere else, so I'm just going to point at that place for April sales, and it says equals B9, so it says take whatever is in cell B9 and bring it down here, and hit equals, and it's written that number in that cell. Now, of course, if I change it here, it's going to change down here. Let's talk about copying. Copying is a fairly simple operation, but it can get you in trouble if you don't do it right. So let's look at a couple ways to copy. One, of course, is that I just, if I have the mouse, when I highlight a cell with a formula in it, there's a little box down at the left bottom right corner. And I can grab that box and copy it anywhere. So I just drag it out, and it's going to copy that formula across. I can also copy it down, okay? So we'll see what the difference is between those two. So that's the same formula in all of these cells. The important thing to remember about a formula that has references in it, first of all, there's a rule on formulas in a model. If you're creating a model, then all formulas should have no numbers in them, unless the number is truly a constant. Formulas do not have numbers in them unless the number is truly a constant. So if it's something that will never change, like the 1 plus when you're figuring an interest rate or something, otherwise formulas have no numbers in them. They have cell references in them. They have mathematical symbols. They may have words that describe a formula that's being used, but no numbers. That keeps you from short-circuiting the power of the spreadsheet, which is to be used as a model. What the formula says here, first of all, if we have a formula in a cell, we can always see it up at the top, or we can double-click on the cell and see it. So it says equals B9. It's not really what it says, because this formula is exactly the same formula. We copied it over there. And it says equals C9. So what the formula is really saying is it's giving a map. It's saying bring the value here for whatever is this many rows above me and this many columns to the left of me. So it's not pointing at that cell, it's saying go this many columns up and this many rows over and bring that value here. So the formula here says the same thing, but now that many rows up and that many columns over is there. And this one is exactly the same formula, but now that many rows up and that many columns over is there. So there's a relative reference to a formula. It becomes very important when you're copying a formula, because here we get the result that we wanted. Here we don't, because what that's referring to now is this many rows up and this many columns over. So it's looking at that cell. And so if we were copying a formula, we'll see some that we're doing later on, we want to be careful about copying a formula across or down, because we end up referring to empty cells or cells that don't have any meaning for what we do, unless we make that formula not relative, but absolute. So there's both absolute and relative cell references in formulas. So we'll see how that works in just a second. Other ways to copy formulas, of course, are to put the cursor in a cell, use the menu, go up and say edit, copy, and then go someplace else and say edit, paste, and that's about the longest way you could think of to do that. Although there are some things we'll see as pasting special where that comes in handy. And of course, the old way to do it, before we had even a mouse to work with, you know, there were computers before there were mice. So there were lots of just keyboard key strokes that we could use to do particular movements, and all of those still exist, although they're not they're fairly standard across programs, but not widely known. But for copying, if you put your cursor in a cell and hit Control C for copy, hold down the Control key and press C, and then move to wherever you want to go and press Control V, then you're copying that formula to that point. So sometimes if you're, you know, especially if you're in a car or something and your mouse is jerking around, you can't get to the pad on your keyboard, that those keystrokes come in handy. Another one that's useful on a laptop is if you want to highlight an area, of course, you hold down your right mouse button and highlight an area. Again, if you're in a car or something moving around, or it's just sometimes it's just it's kind of a minute operation to do that on your laptop using your keypad, you can always start at a place, hold down the shift key, and use the arrow keys. And as you hold down the shift key and use your arrow keys, you're highlighting an area. And so it gives you a lot more control, particularly since Excel likes to, if you're dragging down the bottom of the screen, all of a sudden it goes down, you know, 1,000 rows below it. So it's a feature, not a bug. But this way you don't have to do that. It gives you a lot more control over where you're highlighting. Okay, let's look at formula for collections. If you have any questions, I'm going to go through this. Just sing out, because I can stop and do anything again, or if you want to know how to do something that I'm not doing, be happy to show you. Okay. All right, collections, we need a formula that says we're collecting now from 3 months, remember. So in April, we're collecting part of April's sales. We've got a cash portion of April sales. So 20% is collected in the month of the sale. We're also collecting 45% of March's sales, and we're collecting 35% of February sales. Okay. So we need a formula. We could do it on three lines if we wanted to. You can have collections for each of those months and add them up. But here we're going to do it all on one line. So we need a formula that will do all of that. So for April, we're going to say, all right, for April equals April sales, just point at that and click, times the rate that we're going to collect from April sales, that's right there, so 20% for April, plus March's sales times the input rate for March. Notice that while we're creating a formula, we get some help. And it's color-coded, so as we enter that formula, we've got the first one here is blue, and it's pointing to, it's showing us on the spreadsheet where that blue input is. It's got this one outlined in blue. And then this one is green, and it says, where's green? Well, that one's right there. So we can follow the formula as we're creating it. It's a good thing to do, because as formulas get big, we can make mistakes in the logic, and so this is giving us a visual picture of what the formula is doing. And then I need plus February sales times the rate for February. Okay, so we've got all three of the months and all three of the rates there. So we collect $685,000 in April. If we copy this across now, we get numbers, and they look reasonable, but they're wrong. And the reason is, what this one is saying is take this month's sales and multiply it by whatever's in this cell, which is nothing, and take this month's sales and multiply it by this, and this month's sales and multiply it by this. So we're a column off by doing that. So if we just copied that across, it worked up here because we were only using sales, and copying it across was fine. We had sales in each one. But here, we don't have those repeating themselves across the page. So you've got to be careful when you write a formula, because you can get something that looks reasonable. These numbers don't look terribly awful. But again, if you double-click on one of those, it's a good indicator that says, I'm pointing at an empty cell. And all the rest of those are off. So we've got to do something to make sure that that doesn't happen. Let's go back to our formula. In any of the references for cells, we want, as we copy this across, we want these three cells to move. We want to refer from for April to these three, for May to these three, and for June to these three. But we always want it to refer to those same three cells up there, not to move. So the way to do that is you have to lock the reference to the cell. If you put your mouse click in any inside of the reference to that cell anywhere, and press the F4 key. The F4 key is a toggle. The first thing it does is put two dollar signs in. The dollar signs are locks. So it says, with a dollar sign in front of D, this formula will always refer to D as the column, and with a dollar sign in front of 13, it will always refer to row 13. So it's locked onto that cell, whether we copy up or down or across, it'll always refer to the same thing. And we can leave it with that. The only thing we'd really need here, since we're only going to do this calculation in this place, is we really only need the column lock, but we'll leave them both locked. And we need to do the same thing here for C, and the same thing here for that, okay? So we've got dollar signs in front of all of them. And now if we copy that across, it will adjust, since we didn't lock the references to sales, it will adjust as we move across and pick up the three that it should as it moves, but it'll always refer just to those three cells in the formula. Here's another trick that, we'll use this one in a second here. I'll show you that one after a while. Okay, so we've got sales and collections. Let's look at payments. What we really got going on here, this is a label on payments. I'm going to go ahead and set it off so we know that it's a label. So I'll bold it and underline it. And this was also a label for cash budget. So I'll pick up the format from here using the format painter, click that once and say, okay, I want that one to look the same. We might want a quick way to set off some things underneath is if we want these to be indented a little bit. Indenting is very easy to do. You can, of course, put spaces in front of it when you type, but that's kind of a long way to do it. And so we do have an indent tool. So it's on the ones that we don't use as frequently up here, but there are two: an indent, decrease an indent, and increase an indent. So I'm going to click that one. That'll be added to the toolbar now, but it gives me a nice quick indent there. And then maybe here we're going to want a summation sign because this is a sum of all the payments. So I'll use an underline for that. Notice again, with the accounting format, it's going to give us a nice underline underneath that. No matter how wide or short we make the cell, it'll adjust that underline accordingly. Okay, so for our materials cost.
I have a question.
Yes.
About the underline. Usually you can press the Control U and it'll underline it for you. Why does it do, when you press Control U instead of the underline up above, why does it only underline the words if we formatted it?
Because it's that, it's two different commands, and so with that, it's always going back to the default format. When you use that key. A lot of the other ones it's not going to affect, but the other one doesn't make bold and other things that has that key, it's not going to matter. It's going to be the same. Or italics, but for that underline, for some reason it does. All right, so for materials purchases, what we're told is that we have a rate, which is given up here. So materials as a cost of sales is 50% of the month's sales, but it's paid in the month following the purchase. So for instance, here in April, in March we bought 50% of 600,000, we bought $300,000 worth of inventory materials, but we didn't pay for it until here. And so our cash flow is gonna be in April for that. So our formula is gonna be equals sales from March times the materials cost as an input. And again, we're going to want to copy this across, so we're going to need to lock that. So I'll hit the F4 key. And now we can copy that across and have it be correct for the other two. Wages is also an input, and we pay that in the month that of the sales, so it's a percentage of sales paid in the month of the sales. And so equals sales for April times the wage rate, and then we're going to need to lock it. Fixed costs are given as an input each month, so at $120,000, and we'll lock that. And we can do two at once and copy that across. So I've got figures for those 3 months, and then we were told there was going to be a tax payment of $200,000 in April. We didn't make that an input, so it's only going to be 1 month. So there's a $200,000 tax payment there. And it's a good idea to put zeros in the other cells there. We'll see why in a minute. So our total payments are going to be the sum of those, just sum down. Of course, we've got lots of ways we can do a sum. There's a sum formula. First way we could do it is just say equals and say that, hit the plus key, that, plus that. So we could do a formula with adding four things together. There's a formula, a function to do sum, which is equals sum, parentheses, and then we could highlight the range. But the easiest way to do a sum and several other things is highlight the things that you want to sum, leave an empty row or column, or both, so a row below or a column to the right, or both, and then go up to the top and use the summation tool. If you pull down the little arrow next to that summation tool, this is what it can do. So you got a choice. The automatic thing is going to sum, but it can also give you an average, so it'll write a formula in there to average those things, or give you a count of them, or a maximum, or a minimum, or you can do some other things too. But those are the automatic ones that it does. So if I just hit the sigma, it's going to automatically sum everything as long as I left one row at the bottom.
Yeah.
It's just a given, so it's just there's no input for it. It's just 1 month, so it's $200,000 tax payment. It was given in the setup to the problem back in the presentation, so it's not an input because it's just one thing that we had to put in there. Okay, since we're summing, it'd be nice to put an underline under those. And so that's easy to do. The reason that we need a zero there is if we had just left this blank, we wouldn't get any underline. So to make it consistent with having the underline appear under all of them, having an actual zero in that cell is useful. Because you won't get the sum unless you do. The way that summation tool works is we can sum it. Sometimes you need a sum at the right and underneath. So if I take this off and leave a column to the right and a row underneath, it's going to sum across and it's going to sum down.
So if you just highlight the whatever 12 squares there, you're not going to get the sum underneath it.
Yeah, no place to put it. So I don't know what to do. And you can leave more than one. For instance, if I want this out. If for formatting reasons I don't want that sum here, I want it here, that's okay. You can leave as many blank rows as you want, and it's going to give you the sum in the last one. So if I do that and hit sum, I'll have a blank one there, but that maybe for formatting reasons I want to be able to adjust the row height of something above it or have it be in some other place, and I can do that. So it's just as long as there's at least one row or column that's vacant underneath it, it'll work. Okay, so we're getting some of our calculations done. Let's move down to where we're figuring net cash flow, and then we'll work on the cash account. Net cash flow is just going to be the sum of our collections minus the sum of our payments, so inflows minus outflows. So equals collections for that month minus total payments. And we have a negative cash flow, $175,000. That's another thing that the accounting format does for you is automatically, is it will format negative numbers with parentheses around them, so that's the accounting convention. Okay, now let's work with the calculations for the cash account. Bring my label down here, so we've already formatted that. I'll format that the same way. Okay, so the calculations are, we need the beginning balance first. Set up for the problem just said that we had $100,000 cash balance at the end of March, so that will be our beginning balance here. And also, given in the problem, is that we have a marketable securities balance of $50,000. So you got $100,000 in cash and $50,000 in marketable securities to start April. So here we're just looking at the cash account to begin with. And so our beginning balance is going to be the ending balance from the month before. So I'll say equals that cell, whatever it was. The reason for doing that is when we copy that across, it'll now be referring this time to this balance. And so we'll just do the calculation for April, and it'll work for May and June. Okay. So we start with $100,000 in cash. What's our net cash flow for that month? Well, that's just equals what we figured up here. So minus $175,000. So our unadjusted ending balance will be the sum of those two. And let's start putting in underlines here so we can keep things straight. So I'm going to underline that as a sum. Put it over here. Okay. So before we do anything, we're going to be $75,000 in the red in the cash account. At the end of the month, we're told in the setup that the company likes to keep that $100,000 as the minimum cash balance for safety purposes, and so we want at least $100,000 in the account. So we're going to adjust it back to with whatever it takes to put in the account, so that we end up with $100,000 as the ending cash balance for that month. Okay. So with this problem, as long as the cash balance, desired cash balance isn't going to change across here, then what we're going to need to put back in is whatever the cash flow was. So we can negate any entry by starting it with a minus sign. So instead of equals, I'm going to start it with minus and say minus whatever our cash flow was is what we're going to need to put back in. Okay. So we're going to need to put $175,000 into that account, so that sum this, we end up with $100,000. Okay? So in that month, we start with 100, 175 goes out in the net cash flow. We're going to have to bring the 175 in from somewhere to end up with 100,000. And now let's copy that across and see what happens in the other months. Okay, so in this month, we start with $100,000 again. We had $30,000 as a positive cash flow come in. Our unadjusted balance will be $130,000. We only want $100,000 in the account. We'll be able to take $30,000 out and put it somewhere else. We'll see where in a minute to end up with $100,000 in the account. And in June, we start with $100,000. $250,000 comes in. We'll have $350,000. $250,000 can go out somewhere else, and we'll end up with $100,000 in the balance. So that's what the cash account looks like by itself.
Did you drag that all the way across?
No, it's a computation that comes down and could, because it's always going to be the same. But here it's actually summing. It's this plus this. So this is this plus this.
Can you click on the 175 so the adjust? So yeah, can you click on that one so I can see
that? That says minus this. It just says, the formula is minus that cell. So it says, take that number, change its sign, and put it here. Okay, now what we need, what's going to happen here is, we're going to look at first, I'm going to worry about accounts receivable and accounts payable right now. We're looking at these two accounts. So marketable securities and short-term loans. Remember last time when we looked at the cash plumbing system, said if we get more cash in the main balance account than we need, it's just sitting there doing nothing, and that's unproductive. We need to put it where it's at least doing something, making a little bit of a rate of return for whatever time that we don't actually need it in the account. And so marketable securities is where it would go. So any excess that we have goes into marketable securities because it makes some small rate of return, at least, on the money that's in it. And if we run below the desired balance of 100,000 and we don't have any marketable securities, then we would take a short-term loan to get the money that we need back in that account for a temporary period. So these two accounts, the marketable securities and the short-term loans, are the regulators on the balance that we have. And typically, we're not going to want, they're mutually exclusive. We would not want to have marketable securities and also have a short-term loan, because the interest that we're paying on the short-term loan is always going to be higher than the interest we're making on the marketable securities. So we're always better off to use whatever excess we've got to first pay off the short-term loans, and then if we have no short-term loans, put it in marketable securities. And likewise, if we need to draw balance back into the account, the first place we'd go for it is marketable securities. Draw those down to zero before we start borrowing any money. Okay, so we're going to need to fill in these. This line will help us do that. It's just a little trick that helps us with the calculations. We could write a big complex formula down here that would do the same thing, but it's easier to see what's going on if we use this little trick. So in this row, what we want is the cumulative cash surplus or shortage that we have at that time. And we include marketable securities as part of this cash because it's sort of near cash items. So at the end of March, we had what we needed in the cash account, and we had another $50,000 that was sitting there in marketable securities. So our excess cash was really $50,000 at that time. Okay, for April, what happens is we start with $50,000, but we have that $175,000 negative cash flow, and so our cumulative surplus or shortage is going to be the $50,000 minus the $175,000 that we just had negative for that month. And likewise for the next few months, we're going to be adding in the amounts that we have. So for April, our formula needs to be equals what we had from the month before plus whatever our net cash flow is for that month. So we can pick it up from here or from here, either one. I'll pick it up from there. Okay, so it says, all right, our excess or shortage, we're $125,000 short in April, and if we drag that formula across, okay, so it says we're short $125,000 here, but we picked up $30,000, so that brings our shortage down to $95,000. And we picked up $250,000 here, so that gets rid of our shortage and gives us an excess of $155,000 cumulative at that point. Okay. So that tells us what our marketable securities and loans need to be. Anytime this is positive, that's the marketable securities balance. Anytime this is negative, that's got to be a loan. So it's assuming that we would draw down marketable securities first and then take a loan for the difference. So here, even though we lost $175,000, we had $50,000 to start covering that with. We're going to need another $125,000 in loan to cover that $175,000 that brings us back to $100,000. Here, we'll be able to use the $30,000 to pay off part of that loan. Here, we'll be able to use the $250,000 to pay all of that loan, and we'll have $155,000 left over to put into marketable securities. Okay? So that's a picture of what our marketable securities and loans look like, and we just bring that down here for our balance sheet items then very easily. What we need is an if statement. An if statement is a formula. There are lots of pre-programmed formulas, and you can always get a picture of what it is if you start the formula. So it's equals if and then an open parentheses. And it gives you a picture then underneath the formula that reminds you of what the formula does. What an if statement does has three parts. The first part says you have to test whether something's true or false. Well, what we want to test here is, for marketable securities, is this number positive? Is it bigger than zero? Okay. So the logical test is this cell greater than zero? And then it says, there's a comma, and then in the formula it says, what do you want me to do if that's true? Okay, well, if that's positive, I want you to write the number in the cell. What do you want me to do if it's not true is the last argument, and in this part, I'd want you to put zero. Okay, because at that time, if it's negative, we would have drawn down all our marketable securities and we would have short-term loans. So our marketable securities would be zero at that time. So and we can nest if statements inside of if statements. I don't think we'll need to do that here, but they can grow into fairly complex things. So the test again is for this cell, logical test, is this bigger than zero? If it's yes, write this number here. If it's no, write zero, okay? So let's finish our formula. So the logical test, the first thing we have to write is, so the test is this cell greater than is down at the bottom of your keyboard by the period, so shift greater than. Is it greater than zero, comma? If it is, well, just bring this number down.
Do we need to put a negative sign in front of that? Or would just
no, because it's, we're only going to bring it down if it's positive.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so, comma. What do you want me to do if it's not positive? I want you to do nothing. Write zero here. Okay. So zero, and then we'll close the parentheses. Okay, and if we copy that across, we should get zero in the first two and 155,000 in the last one. And then for short-term loans, we need the same sort of thing, only now we are going to need the negative in front of it. So our formula here, very close to the other one, is going to be equals if. Logical test is what's in this cell negative? Is it less than zero? Comma. Okay, what do you want me to do if it's less than zero? I want you to bring that value down but make it negative. Change its sign so that it shows up as positive. So I can say negative first, and then point at this cell, so minus E42 on mine, comma, what do you want me to do if it's not less than zero? I don't want you to do anything, I'll put a zero there. So now, in that cell, it just brings that value down if it's less than zero, but changes its sign. And if we copy that across, and we get this being the remaining loan in that month, and then the loan is paid off, and we've got 155,000 balance left. So what this account, what these two accounts are showing us, two balance sheet accounts, are that here we had 50,000 marketable securities, no loans. Here we would need a loan of 125,000 at least. Here we'd be able to have paid off a little of that loan. Here we'd have it all paid off, and we'd have 155,000 back in marketable securities. Questions on any of that?
Can you want us to format like the months and stuff the whole way down?
Yeah.
The months and the month of the way. Do you want us to format the whole way down?
Yeah, we'll be doing that in a minute. We're just doing numbers now. Okay, the last two entries we have are marketable securities and accounts, accounts receivable and accounts payable. This is, I'm just putting these in here to show you how the cash budget feeds a lot of things in the balance sheet and income statement. So these are all balance sheet accounts that fall directly out of the cash budget. Okay, for accounts receivable in April, accounts receivable is going to be everything we've sold but haven't collected. So we've already collected in April. We have collected, here's a trick that, by the way, is helpful when you have a spreadsheet that's large and you need to see things other areas. There is a, you can't quite see it on the way that the screen is set up, but if you go right up to the top right corner of the area itself, so right by, this is, you know, my last indicator here is H, right up at the top of, right next to that, so that your cursor turns into a little bar, you'll see it better on your screen. I can't show it here, because it gets cut off, but there's a little bar there. And if you grab that bar and pull it down, what you're doing is splitting the screen. And now you can have the top part of your screen show different areas than the bottom part. So we can go back up here to the area where we had our inputs for collections and still be able to see them down below. And so when you're building formulas where you've got a large spreadsheet and you're looking around the different areas, that's sometimes a useful thing to do. There's also a horizontal one that's down at the bottom, so you can split it horizontally, you can split it vertically, you can split it both. You can have four different screens going on at the same time. That only works, unfortunately, within a single page in the spreadsheet. You can't have part of that display, you know, a page over here, and part of it display a page over here. To get rid of it, you just grab it and pull it back up to the top.
So, where do we want to put it?
Huh? Okay, so for accounts receivable for April, let's look at what we've collected. In April, we would have already collected 20% of April sales, so we've got 80% left. We would have already collected 45% of May's sales, plus the 20% that we collected in the month of March's sales. So we would have collected 45% of March's sales plus the 20% we collected in March. And for February sales, we would have not collected the whole thing. So our accounts receivable would be, what have we not collected in April from February? Well, we've collected everything from February. What have we not collected from March? We've not collected 35%. 45% plus 20% is what we did collect. And so we've got 35% left. What have we not collected from April sales? We've not collected 80%. Okay. So our accounts receivable is going to be equals April sales up here. Pick up April sales here. So April sales times, we want 1 minus this 20% here, so we're going to need a parenthesis. Talk about why we need a parenthesis in a minute. Okay, so we need a parenthesis times 1 minus the percent input that we have up above. We're going to copy this across. We need to lock that, so I'm going to lock it with F4. Okay, so that part of the formula says take April sales and multiply by 1 minus that 20%, so this is 80%, so we need 80% of April sales here. Let's talk about why we need the percent, the parentheses here. There's a rule, algebraic rule of operators, and the spreadsheet follows that rule. If we didn't have the parentheses here, we wouldn't get the result we wanted. Because the rule of operators, precedent of operators says, in a formula, the first thing that it's going to happen, unless you tell it to do otherwise, is it's going to take any exponents, which we don't have any in here. The next thing it's going to do is multiply. The next thing it's going to do is divide. The next thing it's going to do is add. And the last thing it's going to do is subtract. And it'll do it in that order. So if we didn't have those parentheses, what would happen first? Is it would take E22 times 1, And then it would subtract whatever's in D13 from it. So with parentheses, we're telling it, don't do that. First do this. Do this operation first as an internal operation, and then multiply it by E22. Got to remember that precedent of operators is why we need parentheses there. Okay. So this is how much we're going to have from April sales. We also have March sales to collect, too. And so we're going to need to add to that sales from March. So this sales times, we need the same thing, parentheses, 1 minus, now we need two things coming out of it, though. We need the percent that we're going to collect in cash in the month of the sale. And we're also going to need minus the percent that we're going to collect from the previous month's sales. And we're going to need to lock those because we're going to copy it across. So use F4 there and there. And close the parentheses. Okay. So this is what's left of April. This is what's left of March. There won't be anything left of February. It's already been collected. Accounts payable will be a little easier because there's only, there aren't many months to worry about. There's only 1 month to worry about. So accounts payable is going to be from those purchases for materials. Remember, we bought 50% of March's sales in March, but we paid for it in April. And so 50% of what we haven't paid, so the amount for April sales is what we're going to be carrying at the end of April. As the amount for purchases in April is what we're going to be carrying forward to May. So our accounts payable at this point in April is going to be equals April sales times the cost of materials input, which is there. We want to lock it because it's only in one cell, so we'll lock that. And so it says in April we bought 50% of April sales, but we're not going to pay for it until May. So our accounts payable in April is the amount we bought for April sales. So 600 we owe from April sales, and then other amounts are carried across. Okay, so we've got our calculations done. Why don't we take a break? 5 minutes, we'll come back, and now we'll look at formatting.